Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right, everybody, welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, back to the chair of destiny.
Do you feel Jeff's presence there?
I feel Jeff's
presence. You absorbed his essence through the chair?
So I would say something glowing and wonderful, except that I must cop to the fact that I have not had a chance to listen to the show. But everyone loved that Jeff did a great job.
He did, as usual.
And Ryan was on as well, so it sounds like you guys had a great time.
Yeah.
And that is Mr. Jeff Cannata here to my left-hand side.
I am happy to have you back, though, Garnet. It's always fun having you in the house.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
And we are joined by two fabulous folks from a studio that has decided not to go the dog-to-lion name change route. Although you could be the Naughty Lions. That would be kind of awesome. No, you don't think so?
I totally approve.
You approve of that?
Oh,
that would
yes.
be... Wait, Jason, what's your job? I actually don't... Are you community...
How did you get in here?
What do you do? How did you get in here? It's my friend Jason from Naughty Dog, and he does
so
stuff
like,
there.
Title-wise, my title is just web developer. But
okay. What
I handle is a wide range of things that anything technology-based, website-based, stats we do. I did all the Uncharted 3 stats, mobile-based, a lot of fun stuff I keep under my hat.
And you're wearing a hat, so that's very helpful.
I try to.
And you said this is your very first
podcast. It's my first podcast.
Wow.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Wow.
I'm breaking this cherry here.
Don't be afraid of the mic. It's okay. And then next to him is Naughty Dog's community
strategist,
Arnie. And Arnie, you're a podcast guy. You've done podcasts before.
I've done a few, yeah.
But first time here, everybody.
The first time.
Yes. First time.
So, what do you think, Naughty Lions?
Naughty Lions?
We got to make a documentary like yes. Snoop Dogg Dig. Yeah. Then we can do this.
Well, you have to get religious first. You have to get religious and then obviously do a reggae game.
I'm down.
And then you can.
I'm completely down. Oh, I'm so down.
Naughty Lions. You could tell the entire Rastafarian experience in a game. That'd be serious.
It'd be amazing.
The Last of Us, man.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly. It's perfect.
All right. So we've got a ton of stuff to talk today about. We've got a plethora of games, which we'll do some quick hitters up front with games that some of us have played individually that you want to hear about. And then we've got some more catalog sort of like old stuff. Like, yeah, I've been playing Lost Odyssey, and we're going to talk some about racing games. We're going to talk a little bit about Star Wars The Old Republic going free to play. And then there's this Army of Two announcement that I can't wait to talk about. It's sort of like
a gift to you.
A gift to me. Yes, it was a gift to me, and it just won't quit giving. It's beautiful. It is beautiful. I hate to slag on games, but
sometimes you love to slag on games.
You know, no, it's not that I love to slag on them. It's that if you sort of, we live in a weird era where there's this instantaneous negativity that comes out very quickly on the internet, and people jump all over stuff, and then we want to swing the pendulum back the other direction.
Followed closely by a long-term negativity on the internet, and then just kind of wrapped up with a period of intense negativity on the internet.
And oftentimes it's not really warranted, right? I mean, oftentimes it's you know, someone with a very specific agenda or a very, you know, small group of people who are like, and I'm talking about specifically in games. I'm not talking about politics, folks, so please don't drag politics into this. I'm talking about specifically about games. You know, like people have their, you know, their sacred cows about what they wanted in their fighting game or what they wanted in their strategy game. And when they're not met, you know, they get all upset. But come on, did anyone want an Army of Two third game? Really? Really?
Army of Two three? This time there's three of us? I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we will talk about those first. It's a good note to start off on.
I like the idea of there being an awkward third guy there. Where the two bros are broing it out, and he's like the third awkward third wheel who's like, "Hey guys, I'm here. I see that you both can open that that gate together and you're boosting each other up the wall. I'm just chilling.
Too.
Yeah. Well, now I'm envisioning like a really scrawny dude who like kind of gets a second rate equipment. His gun's always jamming.
That would be
comic
awesome.
Relief, right?
Yeah, like Lethal Weapon 3, right? With that has Chris Rock or no?
It's
Pesci.
Joe Pesci.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's an awesome idea. That's an awesome
that
idea.
An
it's
awesome
two
idea.
Badass guys, and the third person is there to just be wacky. Do you want to play the wacky co-op?
Mm-hmm.
Role?
That would be great.
Yeah, so anyway, the game is entitled Army of Two, The Devil's Cartel.
Oh.
And it's being made by Visceral, who obviously have a great reputation right now. The Dead Space games have been fantastic, so that's a curious association. It's being built on the Frostbite 2 engine, which is probably now the EA engine. It makes sense. So, you know, in the pre-show, we were talking about, like, weird decisions and stuff. I guess part of my being flippant upset about it is that EA is one of those companies that when they announce financials, oftentimes makes us want, you know, kind of sort of seems to be looking for some sympathies when their games don't perform well. Well, they're obviously committing a tremendous amount of resources to this. You've got your big internal studio working on it. You've got your big internal licensed engine team working on it, which means there's resources out of DICE working on it. There's got to be networks operations guys working on it in a big way because it's co-op. And you're making it for a game, the first game of which was, I guess, a moderate success, although, you know, certainly questionable. And the second game was just pretty much a mess.
Must have sold, though, right?
No, I don't think it did sell. Well, I wish that someone had...
Somebody had to greenlight that for a reason.
Well, I think they greenlit it for the aforementioned reasons. They think team and engine... And obviously somebody internal is creatively sold on this idea of a co-op adventure game with the two dudes.
Well, maybe this one's good.
Well, I think they're probably still trying to find a shooter that will break out for them, right? Like,
yeah, that's a great
They're
point.
Trying with Medal of Honor. They're trying with Battlefield. So, like, you know, try another shooter and see which one's going to break out since the shooter market's hot. And yeah. Army of Two is a little different than every other shooter out there, but also thematically the same, right? Because it's third person, it's co-op, but thematically it's still a violent shooter.
Yeah.
Well, I would say then that even worse than is their unveiling description. This is their own words from the press release. It'll be a more intense, mature, and grittier in tone. In the very next sentence, they introduce that you'd be playing as Alpha and Bravo. They're intense and gritty dudes, Alpha and Bravo. I mean, really...
Those are just code names, Garnet. Did you not get that?
They work for the Tactical Worldwide Operations.
All right.
That's two.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah,
Army of Two-woo. I got it now. See? Yeah.
But it's gritty and, you know,
realistic.
Yeah, totally. I think they were members of SMERSH, but now they're members of come on.
No, they were members of the Only Network Enterprise. One. Then they graduated.
It's like, which frickin' side of the coin do you guys want to be on? Yeah, it's going to be a gritty, realistic, mature and intense game. When they're going to Mexico to take on the drug cartels.
Well, nothing gritty happens in Mexico.
No. It worked out great for Call of Juarez. You might remember that little game.
Yeah. Hey, you can't rip on the setting. The setting could be cool. It could be a cool game. You're picking
could
apart
be.
Everything.
Could be as the high words, yeah.
I'm saying that the situation that they're casting themselves makes the potential for that to happen very, very, very slim. Very slim. Very slim. You should watch the
Is there
video.
A video.
Yeah, there's a video. So Game Informer has the official reveal. It's their cover story. They also have done some web
tie-in stuff.
Does
it look good? I mean, Frostbite. Is this the first third-person Frostbite game? Or has there been another that I don't know of off the top of my head?
I don't know. Is Visceral using that for Dead Space 3? Maybe not.
I don't think so.
Maybe not.
I don't think they are.
I don't know. Regardless, Frostbite 2 engine looks great. I mean, that's the funny. Like, this engine looks fantastic. But by the way, back to that gritty thing. This is also the game with mercenaries who wear like Jason hockey goaltender masks on their face.
Well, maybe this time they don't. Oh, they do in this one? Do they?
They've still shown the artwork like that. I mean, right. That seems to be the implication. God, it's just freaking ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
But they have a friendship that can't be denied.
And Visceral. I mean, really, like, you know, obviously the initial response on the internet amongst those who, like, looked at it were like, so we can't get a new Mirror's Edge, we can't get something creative like that, but we can get two dude bros named Alpha and Bravo.
Hey man, I agree with
running
that.
Running around in Mexico doing same old shit that's same old.
People, if people had bought Mirror's Edge in the numbers that they bought Army of Two, I bet that we would be getting a Mirror's Edge. So,
well, I would love to see the numbers to know.
It has to be that.
I don't think it has to be that at all. I think it has to be that it's in their wheelhouse. They know how to do it. It's something they feel very comfortable and confident that they can achieve a threshold of quality and execution on.
All right. Well, it remains to be seen. At least they're not calling it the Devil's Cart Hell.
I mean, I think...
right? There's that.
I think they go into
this...
I think that they are seriously going into this
with
a throw all kinds of shit at the wall and see what happens between the, like, grittier and tougher, but, oh, it's also Alpha and Bravo, and they work for two. And it's that whole idea of, like, yeah, but you know what? We're going to get our minimum viable product on this is got a really good shelf on it, man. We can get at least up to this piece just by doing this. We put all these pieces in there. It's going to be awesome.
Well, maybe I think if you look at it the flip side, right, like they have a huge missed opportunity here of having Visceral work on it, maybe reinvent Army of Two into that, but yet they're still stuck with the old sort of tongue-in-cheek dude bro thing. But
that's a much more level-headed way to look at it. I'm not really known for being level-headed.
True.
Sorry, I'm just in a little bit of a rantish mood. Because you want to... Oh, this is a rant that I really swear to myself I wasn't going to have, but now that I'm already ranting, I'll just go right off the rails. I was at Casual Connect last week because, as some of you know, I'm director of publishing for Gamefly now, and we've started a mobile games publishing fund. So I was up talking to developers and looking at games for mobile space. And I will probably offend some of my peers in this business, in this new business I'm in, but I was frankly a little put off by some of the things that I heard there. There was a great deal of discussion about monetization loops and buying audience members and all the kind of sleazy stuff that gamers get upset about, and that, you know, that you know, sounds like conversations where, well, you don't really know what you're talking about. Well, actually, yeah, you know what? Actually, guys, a lot of that stuff that you're worried about in mobile and social games, you're spot on. And that is exactly what's happening. And there are people who are making games around which you better put an air quote that could not care less about making games. They are simply...
Yeah, I think that's a part of, like, the tech industry in general, though. Think about, like, Facebook just recently came out with their stuff like blank ads do more money than actual real ads. I think that's a tech-wide thing of like, let's skim the user best we can. Let's not even get on the subject of like NBC using their stuff in Olympics. Like, I think that's
I agree with you, but I would come back and say that games are not tech. Games are entertainment and art.
Are you trying to tell me
that
there are
mobile
people who want to make money? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Here's the line that I don't begrudge people wanting to make money. And as a matter of fact, we've looked at the numbers and we know that, you know, in the iTunes store, 91% of the revenue comes from in-app purchases. So that means that, you know, most games are free to play and then there's some sort of buy while you're playing. And I'm like, free to play is fine. There are lots of good ways to do free to play. But making a free to play system and then hanging some kind of artwork over it that fits your pay loop is not making a game, and that's not the right way to do it.
Well, theoretically,
and that's not even game design. So calling it game design just pisses me off when I know people who put their heart and soul into making games games.
I'm all in favor of your, you know, righteous indignation about this, and I'm on your side. But theoretically, isn't that model the best way to expose something that isn't fun? If someone downloads something free, it's a crap product, and they have to pay stuff in the game to play more of it, they have the best opportunity to not pay, right?
Yes.
I disagree, though, and I think what you're talking about with like mobile and I think even more like social web-based games, what
it is
you're
social
seeing,
web-based a lot.
It's that there's such a easy way to figure out, like, the metrics is so accessible compared to console games or PC games where you're, you know, it's very qualitative. Here it's very quantitative. So you can just keep iterating on what makes this mechanism perfect. Mm. And the perfect doesn't necessarily have to equate to fun.
Not at
all. I mean, it could be, right? It's divested from the aim of being fun.
If you're lucky, fun might be a part of that. But really, it's advanced consumer psychology and a bunch of experiments being done on paying public. And it's really, it obviously it got me really upset. And then the good part is that there are tons of cool people making really fun games for handheld devices and for some for social space, although the social space is really tough. I mean, I want to listen because I read in the comments a lot of the response to Outernauts, and it seems like that game has possibly fallen more into the Facebook model of having to monetize very quickly, which is, I mean, I don't know. I think that a good free-to-play game really ought to be able to be played for free, right?
Yeah.
And then if you've made a good game and your audience is having a good time with it, it's pretty easy to find things to get people to buy. I mean, that's really not a challenge, is it?
Well, I think it's probably a very difficult balancing act, because if someone can play a game and there's nothing that compels them to pay any money for it, how do you ensure that they pay for the product that you know?
Right.
It's kind of the old shareware model.
I mean, I'm thinking about it.
Which kind of just rested on your conscience. You know
I'm
what I mean?
Certainly thinking from the standpoint of games that we're looking at, and I'm thinking about, okay, if I sign this game for us to publish, how do we wind up being successful, which equates to, in large part, like making money for us and making money for the developer. And yes, there are things that you have to do. I mean, if we make it free to play, we have to come up with a way to make a reasonable economy within it. And I'm not begrudging that any more than I was begrudging, you know, someone selling a retail game or selling an Xbox Live game or a PSN game for 10 or 15 bucks or what. You know, each game has its own model or whatever. But I guess what was freaking me out was people talking about game design, but what they were talking about wasn't game design at all. I mean, I've been to a bunch of GDCs.
It was cash
and a bunch of DICEs.
Design.
They were talking about consumer psychology and how to trip that whatever receptor in your brain is that gets you to buy and obsess on something so that you buy and obsess on it more and more and more.
Do you guys buy stuff in apps? Do you microtransaction your lives?
It's so rare. It's so rare for me to do something like that. I will do it, but first off, like, I barely ever play mobile games. I'm like pretty dedicated to my Vita. Like,
that's a mobile thing. That's mobile.
It is, but the type of game, you know, it's different than like iPhone or Android. Like, they are way more into that type of microtransaction type of idea. But yeah, super rare. It has to be so compelling for me to want to buy something, or like, I must have this to continue playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so invested in the game, I just have no choice. But if it's an option and I don't have to do it, not going to happen.
That's kind of what these guys are dealing with, right?
So here's what another piece that upset me was throughout this conference. The game that I never heard mentioned was Hero Academy. And Hero Academy has been a great success for Robot Entertainment. And it is a example of exactly how to do it. First of all, it's made by a bunch of folks who were at Ensemble. So obviously they're gamers at heart and they made a great game in the first place. And you can have as much fun with the game as you want to without buying anything. And now this happens to have worked off of the way that they built the game. You buy other teams if you want to play with other teams. Now they're balanced into the game. So you don't need to have, you know, the dwarves if you don't want the dwarves. But if you want the dwarves, then you can balance them into the game.
Sure.
And it also removes ads. And what a great trade-off for them. It worked out really well for everybody who played it. You could mix and match and buy what you bought. Like, for instance, I bought the dwarves. I didn't buy the elves. And I will probably buy it on Steam to get the TF2 pack. But, I mean, I'm just going to balance out, like, what I want and what I don't want. And it's totally driven by playing the game and enjoying the game and figuring out what I wanted.
One thing you just brought up, though, is something that I'm willing to, like, I can have that and not pay for other options is ads. Like, I can play a game that sits on the bottom half or something that has an ad running all the time.
That's
now,
cool.
I don't know the difference between, like, how much money they're making per ad versus how much money they're making per product they sell. But I'm more willing to play games that are free but are ad-based than paying for the game and removing the ad. Like, that doesn't mean that much to me. I'm never going to click on it. It's going to be by accident anyways. Hmm. You know?
I've been thinking about what you're saying, though, it's like, if you think about the, you know, in-app purchases or microtransactions that way in mobile and social games, it's still relatively new, speaking, the new model and everything. And so what you're seeing probably is sort of competing forces, you know, the fun versus the business, trying to find that balance. And they're probably maybe not in the same room most of the time, right? Or the engineers and the business people and the actual game designers who are looking at it from an artistic point of view probably aren't sitting in the same room trying to hash those things out. You know, they probably have the business guy coming in. You have to make money somehow, and the engineers are figuring it out how to build that on top of a
Go ahead.
On the other hand, like web has been doing this forever, right? And you had your leaderboard ads or whatever, your click to ads. Those were not nearly as much money as like a forced video ad. I'm surprised mobile social games haven't done that. Like, you make so much more money if you just force them to watch some video.
Oh, isn't that sort of Apple's whole big push recently with what are they calling it?
iAds.
iAds.
Their system.
Of course. How could I not figure out what Apple called the ad program?
Boy, take a guess.
It's a mystery.
They're calling it AdDoze 8. Metro ads.
Anyway, that was the concept, right? Is that you'd be fed a little ad when you loaded up an app.
That,
right?
But still, like, some games that did that. I mean, the original iteration of Words with Friends that was free, after you were around, you were forced to have an ad served to you.
But that's something that is a viable model that I think most people are willing to handle or deal with, instead of having to, like, all right, how can you trick me into buying something?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, it's definitely a challenge, because if I'm looking at games that are not immediately on the surface of them, like, friendly to figure out how you're going to monetize them, then, of course, it becomes a challenge of, like, well, okay, how much do we have to charge for this game in order for it to, you know, just make back the amount of money that's in it, plus even think about making any money off of it, and then, like, okay, how many people are going to actually buy a $5 iPad, iPhone game?
But they're already doing that math for microtransactions. It's just a different type of math, right?
Right. And then, of course, it's, you know, the thing about microtransactions I think attracts people is that whole idea of, like, the heavy spender, the whale, because it's open-ended and it never ends, you know, potentially. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm sorry to get so upset about it, but...
That's okay.
I
hate to see... It's weird, because I take it in the whole giant big picture of the world of, there are so many people out there now that think of games as games on iPhones and iPads. And then that, or Facebook. And now they're thinking of them as the things that are, I mean, it's just, those aren't, like, so many of the things they're exposed to, or they're thinking of as games, are just, they're not even what I love. Doesn't represent them.
Speaking of robot entertainment, since you brought them up.
Yes.
I've been playing Orcs Must Die 2.
Oh, yeah.
This week.
I need to play that. I have it on my Steam.
Oh, my gosh. It's so much fun. Did you guys play the first one?
I played the demo, and I enjoyed it a lot. And I need to actually go out and go buy it and just go have fun with it.
It is a blast, that game. And I never played the first one.
It's good, too.
I'm a bad judge of what has changed or what they improved upon.
Well, you got co-op.
Co-op. Huge. Huge. Huge addition. And I love there's a playful story that goes along with having the hero and there's like a male hero and a female hero, and they, like, the male hero is a big idiot and the female hero is, like, really smart and constantly talking about how stupid he is.
But they're in love.
Right.
Of course.
But, you know, it's basically, the game is basically a third person action version of a tower defense game, mm-hmm. where you're getting waves of orcs coming in from various points on the map, trying to get to another point on the map, and you have to prevent that from happening. And you have a series of traps that you can lay. You have an arsenal that you can accrue. And you got to run around blasting orcs and, you know, slowing them down by throwing down tar pits or spring-loaded floorboards or spike things, or have arrows shoot out of the wall or fire or all kinds of crazy cool stuff. And the RPG mechanics in the game are really fun, because you get awarded skulls based on your performance, and then you can spend those skulls by buying new contraptions or upgrading your existing contraptions or outfitting your guy, or all kinds of different options there. So it really has a compulsion loop to continue to build out your arsenal, and the game gets really nasty.
Maybe I should talk to them about how to microtransaction incentivize that game.
Yeah, maybe you should. I don't know. I've been having a blast with it, and I think you should play it. I think co-op alone is worth the price of admission, and it's fun by yourself too. It's a serious challenge, and there's real strategy involved.
Do you like the layout phase more or the action phase?
I like the action phase. My favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man, you when I played, like the layout stage was by far like using that strategy, like trying to figure out exactly where they're gonna come from and like which wave is actually gonna come which door or whatever.
Yeah.
That was by far the most fun.
Yeah. No, I dig the strategy of it as well. My favorite also is that like when you're between waves and you have that countdown timer going, and you're like, I gotta throw some stuff down and spend some of this cash that I've been making.
I know. I tend to balance between like, all right, what am I gonna replace that got damaged versus like, all right, what am I gonna try to add new to try to stop this new harder wave?
Yeah.
I don't know, I like it.
It's a really, really fun game. Very simple, but then layers of complexity get put on top, and you know, when you've gotten far enough where you have lots of options of different contraptions that you can use, it really is like, what am I going to enter this level with, and how am I going to use them, and it's neat too. There's I haven't clicked on it yet, but I noticed in the menu screen there's a auto log esque ticker thing at the bottom that was like, hey, check out this guy's strategy videos on YouTube.
Oh, so replays.
I don't know if it does replays, but it was like,
I've seen
if you're having a problem, this guy's got awesome strategy, like high level strategy videos. I haven't clicked on it yet, so I don't know where it goes, if it goes to YouTube or if it goes internally somewhere. But I just thought that was a cool concept that it's off. I didn't do it yet, but it's
what I liked about the first game was that while it was a third-person action fantasy game when you were playing it, you never felt like you could successfully hold off the orcs just running and gunning. Like you had
definitely to, not.
You had to have laid out traps well, but then they also had skills that were not just shooting skills so that you could roll them up with the traps. Like the simplest one was being able to use like a force push to shove them back into traps or shove them off, you know, danger areas.
Yeah. And all the weapons have alternate fires that are usually like a grenade, but it's not a grenade that blows up. It's a grenade that just throws them somewhere or something like that.
So they have that again.
But then you can sort of get yourself into a problem too, because there was a couple of levels where I was like, oh crap, the shit's really hitting the fan. I'm just going to blow these guys back. And I knocked a couple guys off of a ledge, which got them actually closer to where the door was. So I'm like, ah, no. And I'm running down, trying to kill him. And then once, you know, when it goes bad in that game, it goes real bad, which is it's its own kind of fun as well.
Yeah, it does sort of have that, like, once you've tripped the chaos button, you're like,
you're like, it's manageable. I'm handling both these doors. Yeah. Oh, shit.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. I will definitely get that in.
It's a blast.
Over the weekend. Although I have like so many things I'm playing now. Somehow I managed to do the summer deal of starting like five games at once. Got tons of going on. All right, we rocketed through the first segment here. We still have a lot to go on this weekend confirmed, so don't go anywhere. We will be right back with more. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. All right, over the little break there, we got back into the free-to-play discussion here, and it's a carryover because obviously many massively multiplayer online games are now all about free-to-play because the model works very well there when it's done correctly as a service. Obviously, there's a sort of mutual customer and game company relationship that builds there. It works very well. Star Wars, going that route, finally. Although not immediately, Star Wars has announced EA has announced Star Wars: The Old Republic will be going free to play this fall. You'll be able to play up to level 50 with some restrictions. Those restrictions would be that you have full access to all of the story beats, but everything else is limited to a degree or cut off. So in limited areas, you have character choices. There's some races that you won't be able to get to. You'll have limited access to war zones and flashpoints. You'll have a set number of space missions that you can do each week, and then you will not be able to participate in operations at all. And then you'll still be able to subscribe at the $15 level. And as a subscribe, as a subscriber, you'll have access to new content updates sooner and more frequently than the free-to-play folks. And I have no idea how that's going to work.
Yeah.
Because you're in. Yeah. Like, that's one of the first things I was like, red flag. How does that work? And then you'll also get a fan favorite reward item in game, which is great. I guess. And you'll also get a monthly drop of coins, which are the new currency of the game. They're called cartel coins. So of course there's a currency that's being added. It's also weird that this is not happening. It's announced, but it's not happening until this fall.
Yeah, that is very odd. Hey, it's free. Keep paying
soon.
Us. Keep paying us.
If you are a subscriber, one of the incentives to staying a subscriber would be that they're going to give you a lot more coins. Hope you like your coins because you get a lot of virtual coins. Or starting next Tuesday, you can buy the standard edition of Star Wars: The Old Republic for $15 and get a lot of coins. So, you know, no reason to, you know, alienate the few hundred thousand people that are still playing it who paid, you know, $60 or more.
But they'll continue to pay monthly.
But they'll get more. Well, so if you buy next week, available on Tuesday for $15, you'll get the game and a month worth of subscription. So basically, you're buying a month worth of subscription and getting the game for free. Mm-hmm. And we don't know when it's going to switch over after that. I'm baffled. You know, one of the things was that they had to, or they didn't have to, but they announced at their recent earnings call that subs have dropped below 1 million for the game. It's not really a surprise. We already saw that they were trending down pretty heavily, and it's the summertime when people are off doing stuff and having a good time. And of course, they shed some subscribers.
Used to be a million subscribers was pretty darn good for an MMO back in the day.
Well,
remember that?
Seriously, we used to be a few hundred thousand was good.
Oh, yeah.
And they maintain that 500,000 is still the break-even point for them. So, you know, who knows? If they could be successful at free-to-play, I guess it could be whatever. Riccatello did finally come out and call the game disappointing, which I think was an unnecessary albatross to throw around the game, which is part of my bigger conversation about this, which is really weird how they've handled this game. They have let it languish. They've tried occasionally to talk about some of the updates that they're going to do, but then they've also, for a long time, been laying the seeds of yes, we're going to go free-to-play. And then why would you, in the same even span of a week, let your CEO call the game disappointing and announce, by the way, we're going free-to-play. You know that disappointing Star Wars game? You'll be able to play it for free because that's what it's worth. When it really, I mean, that's throwing it under the bus because that's bullshit. Obviously, you really liked it, Jeff.
I did.
And I think the single-player stuff was fantastic.
Well,
that's really
the problem. The problem is you're hanging your hat on storyline, which in conceptually is a great idea and is super fun and well executed here, but you sort of do these story arcs and you're kind of done. You know, that's how I felt, at least, is, you know, I'm not, there's not, the core gameplay wasn't compelling enough to keep me returning to it. And once I sort of experienced an arc of a story, I felt like I had my fill.
I think easily could have done this game in a hybrid model of selling a boxed copy for a free-to-play game. And follow what I'm saying is selling, you know, $60 single-player experience, but also it being an MMO supported by microtransaction virtual economy system if you want to stay around and play in it. Because then you're saying, hey, look, we invested to make this single-player game. It's got hundreds of hours of voiced storyline. It's got a great, you know, it's got the BioWare Star Wars story you wanted. And you can stick around in the world and play it as long as you want to. But I think that they've just fiddled around too long. And this is still more fiddling around. It's, yeah, we're going to go free to play, but it's going to be this fall. And we can still buy the game, but it's not going to be $60 anymore. It's going to be $15. But if you buy it now, then you'll get some coins. And if you already are a subscriber, you get some more coins. And, man, we need to do something more. How about we give them a virtual good? Yes, we'll give them a virtual good because, you know, people are going to be so excited about their pet thing that they got, which I think they're not. It's like they keep straddling lines and not deciding which way to go with it. I think, hey, look, when it started to go down, what would have been the thing to do would have been bold and said, you know what? We're going to take this thing full on free to play. Full on free to play. If you already own the game, we're going to give you X amount of virtual compensation, virtual currency for it, and just try to blow it open. Because now,
what are
now
they
it's trending
for? What do they charge for in game if they do that route?
What do they charge for in game?
Yeah, what are they?
Access to. I think that the only way that they can do it based on the way they set the game up is probably the sort of uglier side of it, of if you want to do more space missions than the ones you get allocated to you, then you got to buy them. If you want to do more war zones, you have to buy them. But
it doesn't seem too compelling to me. It doesn't seem too...
If you liked them. I mean, it would be right. like picking like, and then they have to find the right economic point to put it at of like, this is, oh, okay, this is an amount of money I'd be willing to pay to play more missions this week while I'm at home between vacations and want to play more Warzone. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
They could, I mean, they could even do like the more typical free-to-play MMO stuff where it's like speeding stuff up, right? Like,
yeah.
I want to get through the game faster. Right.
Double XP. You
know, yeah, type stuff.
If you pay $5.
I'm pretty sure that's where a lot of the free-to-play MMOs make the bulk of their money, mm-hmm. other than like either closing off content or whatever. I mean, it would be great to know sort of what their, for EA, now that they're going this way, what their long-term strategy is for content updates, because mm-hmm. that would be their way to periodically get an influx of cash, but they'd also have to do it regularly. And if they're kind of straddling the lines, they probably don't want to go all in on that either. And
well, they've done a lot of content update.
Yes.
So, I mean,
right, but charge for it, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Do you know every content update? It's like a $15 pack.
Hmm. That's an interesting way to
put it. That's the way Lord of the Rings does it, right? Like every major yeah. content update, it's like a $10 or $15, I think.
Which I think is a great contrast because Lord of the Rings, another huge, huge licensed property, was not doing that great, went free to play, and by every time they talk about it, at least, is a big success for them. Arnie, you've played it. So, how does the Lord of the Rings system work?
The Lord of the Rings system, I don't actually, to be honest, I don't remember if there's a subscription. I was the one that was like, I went all in. I paid like the $200 founder's fee because I figured over time it would make sense for me. So like you're grandfathered in and basically you just, you know, you have to pay for anything and you just get coins at an accelerated rate for everyone else for thanking them from supporting ahead, which I think was a really good sort of business model that I don't know if Star Wars did. Which was a way to sort of get this massive, I don't say massive, but
they've
like the
done,
whales.
They're doing some stuff. Star Trek was very good with people who bought in for long term.
That idea was in vogue for a while. And really, it was always the big new MMO would be announced and it'd be like, you pay this and you'll never have to pay again. It's this big chunk of money up front. But it's sort of kind of fallen out of fashion. Nobody really does that anymore.
Yeah, I find it's really surprising because to me, I thought when I heard about it, I thought it was really smart because the biggest thing for an MMO is like, how do you get past like that first year, right? Where you're dealing with player balance and you're trying to support it. Mm-hmm. And if you start losing people and you start losing revenue, then things are going to go south real fast. So this was a great way to say, okay, we have a fixed money or a fixed pool of money, and we know we can carry it on for longer. But basically what Lord of the Rings now does for their free-to-play, it's, you know, like you can get items or you can get crafting bundles or you can get double XP or you can, you know, get like attribute buffs for a while or you can raid more often. Or you can, if you're playing for free, I think you can unlock certain raiding areas by spending the coins, which you can buy with real money as well.
But fundamentally, you can play the game for free by playing it a lot.
Pretty much, yeah. They have built their model where if you just keep playing the game a lot for free, you're going to experience almost all of it, in my opinion.
What's crazy overlooked, and I think was probably understood by people originally coming up with these models and seems to be forgotten by people who got latched onto the money-making side of it, is those people who are willing to play that hard are your best champions of the game. They are the people that are in forums telling people about how awesome the game is. They are the people who are telling their friends about the game they play all the time.
And bad news is those people don't have very many friends.
Hey.
I've got a cheap shot. I'm sorry.
Not necessarily true. But you know what I'm saying is they are, I mean, from a marketing standpoint, they are the holy grail. They're the marketing thing that you can't achieve. They are the real player who's really into your game and that's going to spread it and talk to everyone about it, which is why they ought to be able to play it like that, because they're the one who's bringing you in all those other players who might not be quite as engaged and then will use whatever your monetization system is, if it's reasonable, to play the game.
The interesting thing that I've learned about myself and my relationship with MMOs is that contrary to what I would have thought about myself, I am less drawn over the long term. I am less concerned with the world, the IP, the familiarity, the fiction, the richness of that lore than I am with great mechanics that can sustain fun over a long period of time. Like, I got super excited about Star Wars. The Star Wars-iness of it was awesome at first, and I was playing and enjoying the story and having a great time, but it just got stale so quickly for me, whereas Terra, on the other hand, I couldn't care less about the fiction. It's ridiculous and silly and a mishmash of all kinds of disparate elements and disparate kinds of design choices. And yet, because the combat is so darn fun and the world looks so interesting, I can't wait. They just announced the expansion for that's coming out. I can't wait to dive back into
Terra. I wish Terra was free to play.
I agree.
Because if Terra was free to play, I would still be playing it.
It's an awesome game. It will be.
It sounds like you like something like League of Legends, right? Like you just have that same system. You just keep teaming up with people and you just keep taking down. You have your champion. You just keep running with it.
Well, I mean, I haven't gotten into League of Legends, although I played the Smite beta this week a lot. And so I feel like I might kind of love that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love Diablo, and I dig the lore of Diablo, and people are like, oh, the lore of Diablo is stupid. I'm like, but I'm having so much fun. It can't be stupid.
Well, I think for MMOs, because of the way it's built, like, that, most of them, like, I play three MMOs, but there's only one I play all the time, which is Lord of the Rings, and it's because of the lore and the story. Because the other ones, I start...
What are the other two?
Final Fantasy XI, which I'm a little embarrassed to admit I still pay for and not play that much.
You're that guy. You're supporting that game. I keep them afloat. Single-handed.
Are you excited for 14 2.0?
I have not followed that much out of 14. I got invested into really sort of like the nitty-gritty mechanics of 11 that a lot of people hate, but like I like the character classes and I like the challenge and the difficulty, and I didn't really care so much for the story. So when other characters and other classes, like it was getting really hard for me to wrap my head around a lot of some of those changes and how it was different, that I just tuned it out.
Okay. By the way, in retrospect, I would say that 11 actually was probably the most fun I ever had playing an MMO.
What's the third one?
World of Warcraft.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And 11 specifically because the, what are they called, the Renzarokans or whatever, like group efforts where you have to like do the chains, you know, like we...
Oh, yeah.
That, like, figuring out how to do those was really awesome. And needing to use them on Notorious Monsters was a great feeling of cooperative play.
Well, that was the part that I liked about 11, which is why I kept playing it, was, for that, it was the mechanics. It was the challenge of doing that. I played a Red Mage, which is... At the time, I don't know how much it's changed, but it was one of the most complex jobs. You had so much to pay attention to. Like, everything could go south if you didn't do a good job of it. And it was all about the mechanics, that challenge. But like, but Lord of the Rings, I play because of the story. They've weaved the story so much. I could care less about the mechanics. Sure, there's some challenge. I solo all the time. But I think they just did such a great job. Like, it's the only MMO that I pay attention to what the fiction for the quest is.
Really?
It's not like, here's the thing, you got to go do it.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, Lord of the Rings has been the one MMO that has always, since I stopped playing MMOs, sort of been appealing to me out there as well. Hmm. So I guess we all agree then with Adonatari, who on the thread said that on the future of MMOs that the genre is desperately in need of a new combat and quest mechanics, and that everyone should be well aware of this by now. Whether it's a action RPG combat that's actually fun and deep or something else, and I agree. I mean, I think that is. Look how quickly you got excited about Terra, and really all Terra does is the same.
Yeah, not much different, like, but enough different.
But the same thing we've seen in a number of offline action RPG games, right? Yeah. And it's funny because I was watching, like, even Extended, there is a great degree of similarity across systems in probably all genres, but in RPGs, because I was watching Ariel, she just recently started replaying Kingdom Hearts 2. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching her play Kingdom Hearts 2, and I'm realizing there's an awful lot going on in the way you manage a battle there that is very similar to the grouping mechanic in any action MMO. And then I thought about all of those Tri-Ace games, and I was like, wait, these are all really very similar, because you always have these sort of roles that people fall into. You've got, you know, you've got the AoE attacker, you've got a DPS attacker, you've got a tanker, you've got someone who could do crowd management. And then figuring out how to blend all those things together, it's when the system works that lets you blend those things together and feel like you really have good control that makes it really fun. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something more. I don't know. Maybe there's something more
I
can do.
I believe me, like every long car ride I'm involved in with gamers, I always bring that up. Like, how would you guys reinvent the MMO combat system? Like, we always.
What do you guys hit on? I'm curious.
Well, I mean, we can get into a long discussion about it. I would love to hear what you guys think.
Especially Arnie, who's playing three of them at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you do?
I don't know. It's like when you're talking about it at all, like when you play an MMO, everyone wants to feel some sort of individuality. They want to own something, right?
Yeah.
So for like, I'm already thinking the thing you have to tackle with is you still have to create different classes, right? And
sure.
like they have to have different abilities. So then how do you blend that into combat? Well, then you start falling into, well, all of their roles have to be very differentiated. And then I'm back to like the standard combat system. And
trilogy.
And that's what I need to figure out. It's like, how can you get people who feel individual yet maybe sort of have flexibility in the styles, or, you know, maybe that's what it is. It's like everyone has almost all of the abilities at once. And then when you get in a group, everyone can choose, you know, what they want to do that time. So you're not maybe stuck with one class the entire time. But even then, that sounds like a cheap cop out.
I mean, one of the ideas that we've batted around is this idea that instead of having it be about your relationship to the boss, i.e. I'm attacking the boss, or I'm tanking the boss, or I'm healing to prevent damage from the boss, have it be about your relationship with the team, so that it's all about sort of making interesting combinations that work for in this situation, so that, you know, it's sort of, I mean, obviously this is just spitballing and who friggin' knows if it would be fun, but the idea that it's all about creating classes that have different relationships to each other in different situations rather than do the same thing to a boss every time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And I don't know how you would do that. It'd probably be a level of complexity that's pretty daunting, but I just want to see somebody flip the script a little bit and come up with something that is,
I think you're right about
fresh.
Flipping the script. I think that's a great way to put it. Flip the script.
Yeah.
I think what you're touching upon, some of the games do that. You're talking about chain skills back in Final Fantasy XI, where, you know, if you have the right combination of people, then you can do something cooler.
Right.
And you do, you know, you set off things in the same sequence of events. I know Lord of the Rings does that too, where you can do that. So, like, there's some of that in there already. So there's probably room to push that further.
Yeah.
I would flip the script in another way, and it's not from the group side. It's from the enemy side. And I think that one of the things that has become a hallmark of MMO games is that the players, there seems to be a agreement between player and game maker that I, as a game maker, will give you this battlefield and will have the same encounters across it so that you can, when you sit down to play for your hour and a half tonight, know exactly where to go to do this, to do that. You can look it up on a wiki entry and see exactly what mobs I'll face and what loot tables and drops might happen.
That's all in the games now. That they've taken the need to even leave the game for that information out.
Dude, does ThoughtBot still exist?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's all in your minimap. It's all like you just go to the next glowy point and all.
Yeah, they pulled in the web browser into the game.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah,
See that's indicative of the problem, and so I would really love to see, with as much sophistication as we've built in single player games, some of this idea of lots of procedurally generated content on the other side that then challenges my group by virtue of it being dynamic, to figure out how to handle it. And if I do that, then as a designer, it would open up the ability to give those classes more back and forth swappability, because if I'm going into a counter and I really don't know what's going on, it's not as easy for me to know, well, you know what, if we're running X, then we have to have, you know, one healer, one pally, one this, one that, and know all that. Because if we're going in, we know that, well, we're going to have an encounter, but we don't know what it is. Then as we get in, we need to be able to swap things around.
But what you're talking about is a game that's impossible to do on a massive scale.
No, it's not.
What you're talking about is a game that's basically Borderlands or Diablo. That is basically a four player co-op game.
Even Borderlands falls into that same thing of when you go to Quest X, it has boss character A and minions 1, 2, 3, and 5. And it's set up as a very programmed encounter. And I would say just the opposite. I think that in a world where you're already, look, in an MMO, you're already thinking of running the game as a service. There's a whole bunch of dynamic data that's flying around all over the place because you have all these character entries that you can't control. You know, it's not like a single player or a co-op game where you know pretty much where you're controlling the character experience. You're running a big and dynamic environment world. So why not run a big dynamic environment world from the opponent side as well? Just instead of it being player input driven, it's all driven by all your algorithms and monster data.
I think the thing that probably a lot of listeners are screaming at the
oh, Garnet, you shut the hell up.
Well, I was gonna say,
but besides that,
I was gonna say radio, but nobody listens on that. What's that device? game that is extremely exciting to me is this the DayZ MMO kind of thing, War Z, that they're doing.
That did
right?
look really cool.
Which is everything that they've said about this game so far has me over the moon, which is we're not creating a system of quests and rewards, and all we are creating is a rule set and throwing players into it, and they make of that world what they will. And it is a massive, on a massive scale, it's a massively multiplayer game, but it's not walk up to NPC, get NPC quest, finish quest for NPC. It's here are items, here are situations, here are environments that all have a common rule set in this persistent world. Do with that what you will. Create, good guys, bad guys. We can get out of the dynamic NPC, dynamic enemy creation business because players will do that. Players will populate our world if we create an interesting world.
Players are like, you and I are playing.
Yeah.
Or on the same server or whatever. And I can be your enemy. You can be my enemy.
Yes.
Oh,
what's the idea of like recreating the zombie apocalypse where it's like we can team up and help each other out or not? That's what's happening in DayZ right now.
There's still a zombie apocalypse element. There's still a zombie apocalypse element because I think that you need to we can take a look at Eve as a case model of what happens when it's just player driven stuff and all of the weird societal factioning that goes on there, which is cool to watch on the outside, but it is sort of a
daunting to step into.
Right.
Yeah.
It's and so I don't, would that work the way you want it to?
Well, I mean, it's to a smaller extent, it's happening in DayZ right now. I just did the Gamers with Jobs podcast last week or a couple weeks ago.
It's because you're on every podcast according to the internet.
It's a mandate. Not my fault. I'm here to serve. But they had a guy on who is a major DayZ player and just kind of schooled me on what is really happening in high level DayZ play right now. And the idea of, literally, like they've fashioned a series of tent cities that they try to police and have people like from other servers like leaping in and en masse and attacking them. It's craziness. But the idea of doing that in a more robust, massively multiplayer world that was built for that rather than sort of cobbled together as DayZ is as a mod, I find extremely exciting. And I think it could be something that really does flip the script on what an MMO can be. That's like you don't need to have it be so structured. It can be so just an environment.
It starts to become different things, and I'll let you speak to this, Arnie, because I'm going to go ahead. You had a thought, my thought is that there's a difference between the directed experience, which you guys obviously Naughty Dog Games are known for, and then open world experiences. And there is sort of a place where you have to decide which way you're going.
Well, but even with the open world experience, like I'm trying to think of what you're describing, Jeff, with how that plays out. And unfortunately, I haven't played Eve, so I don't know how player driven that is. But there is an aspect of gamer psychology where they need to know what the goal or objective is, like sort of very plain. And the moment you start to take that away, then you're kind of lowering your gamer pool, who's willing to play it.
Totally agree and totally understand and definitely am a victim of that feeling myself. Victim's probably the wrong word, but I definitely feel that way. Which is why I'm so shocked that DayZ is doing as well as it is, that the player base is exploding like it is, because it's literally a game with no purpose. Can you survive?
I mean, like right now, you're talking about it. It's selling it more.
That's the Minecraft question as well. That's
exactly. But these games are extremely
live, survive.
It really is an environment for players to express their creativity. Which I think people really want to do in video games, and there's so few ways for them to do it, and I think that's why Minecraft is it's like, look what I made, come check it out. And DayZ is a very different kind of expression of creativity. It's look how savvy I can be, and I think that these worlds where it's like, take the training wheels off a little bit and let us have systems in which we can be creative and be, and make our own environment. To a certain extent.
I'll have to admit, I still like Garnet's idea better. Like, I like the idea of, this hidden sort of Left 4 Dead AI director in the back, creating the encounters for me procedurally. Sorry.
And I think as we continue to develop this idea of, and it builds on the whole, I mean, it's something that even a few years ago, we probably wouldn't have had the technology to do. But in a world, in a tech world where we're really advancing the idea of cloud computing and distributed gaming, then we can start to do, you can start to think about how you could build enough pieces working together to let that all be happening.
Well, I'm surprised that people don't even, like, there's even a limited way to do that now, and I'm surprised people maybe aren't experimenting with it, like, because it would prevent the typical MMO sort of race to the top, like, we have to make an even badder, you know, boss or, you know, raid to do, where you have, you know, like, the boss or the raid battles, and each one has, you know, let's say a massive lookup table of random things it could throw at you depending on how you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's even a very limited way, but you could still do it. Like, all of a sudden, you know, you're in the middle of a boss battle, and, like, one time you play it, like, you know, maybe there's a separate sort of creature raid that comes in. Another time, you know, he's just spawning minions like he normally would or something.
It's or something random and completely batshit insane happens.
The problem with the MMO space, and I'm sure I don't need to tell you this, I'm sure you have plenty of experience with it, is it's so much built around this culture of efficiency and min-maxing, you know, that in a situation like that, you're going to get guys going in with their party and it's like, oh, we got situation B where there's minions that we've determined is 0.2% more difficult. Hop out, we'll reload, we'll hop back in, you know, and see if we can, you know, charge up the correct.
We've got to build something that's great that does it differently to lure them away from that because they've gotten happy with that and enjoyed it. But if someone gives them something fantastic that goes beyond that, that'll be the next thing.
I think that's part of the player psychology. We see it in Uncharted 3 multiplayer and other games. They're like, if you don't tell us the exact rate of fire that you change by the percent, we're upset because they want to min-max that way too.
All right, well, we will take a little break here. It is Mr. Kanata's birthday as of yesterday. Yeah. He's like 25 years old or something now. He's looking like 23. We have little makers that we're going to enjoy here with some Coca-Cola, so we'll take a little break. We come back on the other side. We still have lots of stuff to talk about, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. That was pretty.
Is that another Fly that Del Rio beat.
He's getting ready for his. He's getting ready for his next joint. You know, he's got to get some beats down.
Some dirty beats. Got
to get some stuff ready to go. Taking the post-apocalyptic world in a whole other direction is this week's Summer of Arcade game Deadlight, which I happen to be the only person who played, and I will keep this short but sweet. If you're really, really, really into the artistic idea of Limbo with zombies, then it might be worth playing with. But I think the execution of the game really falls shy of where the aspirations of it are from what you see in video.
I was hoping for the second coming of Shadow Complex.
Yeah, not so.
Shadow Complex with even more shadows.
Yeah, so that, it's funny you say, because you know shadows are what they call the zombies in the game.
Yeah.
Right? So the catch to the game is that it takes a post-apocalyptic 1986 in the Pacific Northwest and turns it into a 2D side-scrolling action platformer. Of course. But it does really cool things with depth. In the Limbo comparison is that all of the foreground in which your character acts is done in silhouette, but all of the background and the rest of the environment is done in dark, you know, post-apocalyptic palette, but it's in a 3D, you know, rendered scene that goes back into space. So they're able to do some really cool things. Like, there are spaces where you're running through environments with zombs out there in the world, but they're sort
of... Zombs. You call them zombs. Just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
Right.
Zed, whatever. Is that better?
Zoms. Because Zoms. Saying zombie is way too hard.
Zoms out there. Whatever, man. Why you do me like that?
I like it. I like it.
Zoms. There'll be zoms out there, like facing the other direction or whatever, and so it sort of builds the tension because you're running past them, and you know you're thinking about, oh, I'm playing a 2D game, so they're in my plane, but then you start to see the 3D perspective.
The Z-depth of it.
Yeah, and it's really cool. It adds some really cool things, and then as they perceive you, they turn around, and the Z depth is real because they start to come at you into the screen, but until they're in your plane, they're not in your actual play field. So, and fighting's not really a big deal in the game. You have they have this cool stamina mechanic, whereas you a little ways in, you get an axe, and you can swing the axe, obviously, and take on these zombies.
Zoms. During the Zompoc.
We just call it Zompoc. During Zompoc, you can take them on with the axe, and it factors in how fast you mash the button trying to swing the axe to pull down your stamina, and you lose your stamina fairly quickly, you know, as if you imagine you stood there with a giant fireman's axe and swung it 3 or 4 times, you'd be pretty winded. You get pretty winded. It does this cool screen effect where the screen starts to throb a little bit and it really starts to freak you out. And that's about as far as the game goes. I played like 2 hours of it. It's evidently not a whole lot longer than this. And it just doesn't seem to... I was hoping it would do more with it, you know? It's like it's got this really cool artistic complexion to it, and it's the control system is not of a top tier. I mean, I think about some of the really, you said Shadow Complex. Mm-hmm. Obviously, great controlling game, like you really feel and super control your character. Or even, you know, more abstract games like Miss Explosion Man, like the bar is set pretty high for being an Xbox Live Arcade game that is this sort of action platform with some puzzle elements to it. And if you're not banging, you know, that level, it, like, all the atmosphere and environments and just, I mean, it's nice. I don't know.
What would you want different?
I was hoping that as innovative as the Z-depth stuff started to be at the beginning of the game, that there would be more to it and that just never really developed. I mean, the bulk of the game comes down to simple push-button puzzles or quick runs through, you know, heavy danger areas, you know, and a lot of trial and error, and you know, everything's, you know, at least as far as the checkpoints and stuff, they're paced well enough. It's not hard to get past stuff, and I don't know. I think that maybe I were being tough on it because it looked so cool and had so much atmospheric potential, and at the same time, it needed to kind of live up to that too, because that is sort of the promise that writes. Hmm. And at the end of the day, it's not a Last of Us. It's not this giant, fully 3D rendered game with all this procedural shit that's going on in the background. I mean, it is an action platformer. And so, yeah, it's really cool. They did all this stuff to give it atmosphere and give it style. And that's great. If you're going to though be a mechanically oriented game, you know, where I'm about my control fidelity and what I'm doing in the game, then you've got to hit that, you know, you've got to nail that dead on. And I don't think that they really did to the degree that they wanted to.
Do you think they should have stripped some more stuff out, whether it's mechanics or the way the puzzles, like, I mean, you know, the comparison was Limbo with zombies, right? Yeah. Limbo, if you look at it, really was a really simple game. And that's what made it so good, is that it felt really complex. It really challenged you being simple. But like when you're starting to explain it, it seems like there are all these layers, and maybe they went a little too far to get that magic for you.
I wouldn't argue that. I think that there's a cool piece of abstract atmosphere that relates well to the abstract idea of I'm controlling something that happens in the screen with a controller. So like, let me see if I can express this correctly. Conceptually, if a game is about the game mechanic is a step removed from me being directly in the game, because I'm not thinking about me being in the game. I'm thinking about me controlling the controller to do something that happens in the game. So the game being a abstraction to a degree relates well with that. Conversely, if I'm in an immersive experience game, then I just want to almost forget that I'm using the controller, right? I want to be in all the moments of the game and just experiencing them. Did I do that right? Well,
That made sense to me.
It came over. Okay. It came over to me.
Yeah. Say, Jeff was looking at you. And like, what sort of happens
in Deadlight is I just start to get caught up in the world, and then I have to really think about what I'm doing and then be very, very careful about jumps. And
that's funny
button.
That you say that, because my only experience with this game so far, I actually was looking forward to downloading it, but not so much anymore. But my only experience with this game was at E3. I walked up to a kiosk, and it was on, and we only had a couple minutes there, so I didn't really get a chance to dive in too much. But it had been played up to a certain point. I walked up, and there was clearly a jump that I needed to make, and I tried 4 times and died 4 times to make just one simple jump, and I was like, all right, moving on.
There's a lot to see here at E3.
So we'll move on. And other than
What's the cost of it? Because I'm on the fence right now.
It's $15.
Okay.
It's standard Xbox Live Arcade price.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, hey, I would say that I would way rather recommend that you buy Dyad on PlayStation.
Yeah,
Network,
dude.
Really?
This game's awesome,
dude. Fucking synesthesia games. I love that shit. It's the shit.
Just real quick. I love Dyad. I have a really good time enjoying it. One thing I saw on Twitter that kind of got me a little problem with it is like they separated out their trophies versus the main storyline. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, it's, you know, that's a really clean way to separate out people who are just like trophy whores and people who are not. I'm not a trophy whore, but I kind of want, if I want to play this game, I kind of want some type of trophies or something.
You're a trophy whore.
I don't go out and like completely finish it.
I'm not a trophy whore, but I want
trophies.
If I'm going to put out, I want some trophies.
I want it. Think about it like this. Like, I pay for this game and that's the only way you can show that you've actually completed the game or played the game at all. Like, it's not like I can go on your list and, or your Xbox or your PSN and be like, hey, look, I've played all these games. Xbox, you can, I guess.
I'm not clear. Like, what do you mean they separated out the trophy?
So, like, you have your main storyline.
Yeah.
All right, and so say you want a trophy. It's a whole nother.
Oh, it's the additional type challenges. Of way.
Yeah, trophies are all objective based.
So
you have to just go do all these objectives.
I mean, this game is already super fun, but very difficult.
Very hard.
Yeah. All right, fine. So play Symphony when it comes out next week.
All right.
Are you familiar with Symphony?
No, but
all of you, go look at Symphony. The freaking game is badass. It comes out next week. Symphony is.
But
really
I don't want it to come off like I'm dissing Dyad at all, because I really enjoy it. It's just that now. You know, I can't show anyone I played it. I'm just sitting there.
Your trophy whore. Your inner trophy whore comes out.
By the way,
you
did kind of admit to being a
trophy whore. You want something for your time. Give me a fucking trophy for once.
So sad. And I'm also way behind. Did any of you guys ever play Atom Zombie Smasher?
No.
Like, nope. I am so mad at myself. I'm so mad at myself for not having played that all those times. I mean, even at DICE.
Kept telling us, man.
Right. I mean, and it is so fun. It's so fun. And I got it. I lazily bought it on the Steam sale for $2.50 because I'm like, oh, it's like a quarter price. Best money ever spent. It's so fun. It's so cool. And now I'm inspired, because now I'm going to go play Blendo's other game, Flotilla, which looks really good, too. Anyway.
I want to hear you guys do your freaking car.
Our car thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that I can like take a 20-minute break and just drink the rest of this whiskey.
All right. So you drink your whiskey. And me and Jason and Arnie will geek out on cars here for a little bit.
Go. All right,
so the Porsche pack came out, and I was very excited to get the Porsche pack for Forza, and I wanted to go drive my car in it, and I started driving Forza. I started driving the Cayman in Forza, and that's nice. That's awesome.
Sorry. I think we're looking for a Foley artist back at the studio.
Oh, he can do it. Wait, he's got his, like, Mattis isn't here to help you do the other half.
It's a team thing. Go on with the cars.
And I was really getting irritated with it because I've always owned front engine, rear wheel drive cars, 240, Mustang, Firebird, Alteza, it was IS300, whatever. Anyway, so I have a really good feel for how these cars are supposed to drive. And I'm driving this car, and I'm like, this son of a bitch is so ridiculously understeering. Like, trying to get first of all, the car is known for being, especially this is mid-engine rear-wheel drive, which is supposed to be the thing.
It's like snap oversteer.
Snap oversteer.
Yeah.
Should be really sharp, should be like pretty dialed in right up to the limit, and as soon as you lose it, spin it. This is why, I mean, if you go on YouTube, you can see countless videos of people trashing NSXs on track days because they're very dangerous like that. You know, you get to that limit, and if you don't know how to hold it, then once you lose it, it goes around because you got a pivot point right in the middle where the engine is. Of course it spins. And I was just really frustrated with it. It was driving me nuts. I was going into corners and not being able to get the nose to come in, And the only way to get the nose to come in was to bring it down to a speed such that I thought it would be like probably 30% under where I should have gotten to go in, and it would finally break loose and just go into a skid. Not even a drift, though, Jason. This is now we're just scrubbing off. So instead of bringing the momentum vector around the corner to come into where I'm trying to find the apex, mm-hmm. I'm just pushing.
All right, it should be noted beforehand that, like...
No, the sentence was awesome!
Garner and I, and even Arnie, like, we talk about cars a lot. We are car enthusiasts, but, like, I've raced cars, right? I take cars on the track often, right? And from go-karts to drag racing to road racing, like, a whole bunch of stuff. So, Garner and I, we're on the same page here.
No, I like this. I'm learning something, so this is awesome. By the end of this conversation, though, I want a definitive answer, Forza or GTA.
All right, so we'll get to that because I've always been so I have always been
or Grand Theft Auto. That's what I'm curious about.
So those GTA cars oversteer perfectly, so you're fine with that.
And I've always been firmly.
That's how little I know about racing, guys.
I've always been firmly, or at least for the past few years, I've been firmly in the Forza camp, primarily because of how well I thought they modeled tire traction to pavement surface, which you really got a great feel for that. And now driving, coming back to it after a break, I've really felt like there was almost a layer of some kind of, I don't know.
Ice?
Not ice. Not exactly ice. I was thinking more like gravel.
Okay. I can see.
But something like that where it just, nothing would come in right. It wasn't respecting the amount of brake I was applying. It wasn't allowing me to trail braking was just really a disaster. Mm. So you played both.
Yeah, you said you played both.
So this morning,
are you with me on any of these?
So this morning, I went ahead and fired up Gran Turismo, and I have a Honda S2000, so that's what I was gonna base this off of, right? And did some of their like seasonal events. So a kind of like a brand new track I've never been on. Immediately after I went on Forza. And I would have to say that, and this is not me being like Sony company man, but I felt more comfortable driving, or it completely relayed the information I would expect my car to do in Gran Turismo more than it did Forza. There were already other problems I had with Forza. There's problems with both of the games that I felt like made it difficult to get a good estimation of them without doing something like a time trial or something by yourself, like a hot lap, where like AI became a problem in the game, makes it difficult to understand like what actually your car's doing. But it does feel that like, yes, Forza feels like my car does not feel balanced. The tires don't feel like I could be riding on the rims for all I care. It wouldn't make a difference. And it feels definitely like the front and back balance is completely off. I know my car is a little bit spin happy as well, but in Forza, I understood. I'm with you. You don't really
crazy
have to convince
understeer.
Me.
Crazy understeer. Yeah. Can't get the nose in. And
put it like this. In Forza, I was on their like Japan kind of road where it's like kind of like initial D type of thing going on. And the only way I can get a turn is I pull the e-brake.
So for people who ask, how do you set up as far as assists in the game?
Oh, I have almost everything off.
Okay.
Do you play with a racing wheel, or what are you playing with?
So that's kind of a conversation already I have. I've also played iRacer.
Oh, that's hardcore.
And that's like super hardcore. And that one you have to drive with a wheel. I don't feel that the wheels that are out now for any console actually relay the information properly, in my opinion, to what a real car does. Most of the wheels out there that I've tried, they try to like, what is the word? Power assist you in the sense that like, you're making your turn, but we feel like your turn, your weight will feel like this. And so they add weight to the tire or to the wheel or release weight. So I'm like, oh snap, the car is just, I'm like just always auto correcting, always correcting.
Or they add input acceleration to reflect that they don't have 720.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Which
so
totally
I've stuck
things.
With my controller for a long time. And like, I feel like I can compete fairly well. Put it like this, the guy who did the Gran Turismo Academy. he runs his like controller as well. So like, it's not like you can't be fast running one. I think like to be fast in those games, it's not necessarily what products you're using to make yourself go fast. It's more like, do you know how to drive and are you driving fast? Right. It's not about like slip angle or how you set up your car. All it doesn't really matter. It's like, can you drive fast? Do you know where to brake and how to balance your car left, right, front, back kind of thing?
Can I ask you guys a question that's going to totally be a massively noob question, but something I've wondered for a long time? As somebody that really knows nothing about car simulation video games, but has fun with them, and as somebody that has driven a car since I was 16, so much of the information that I get when I'm driving comes through my body, through my foot, or through the feeling that I have, the sensation of gravity and inertia. How do you judge the feel of a video game version of that when you are without that kind of input? Do you know what I mean?
I exactly know what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm trying to decide who should answer this question, but...
We both should. I know I've answered that question a bunch, so I'll tell you what mine is. My answer is you can only compensate with the sensory devices that video games work well with. So this is why when I drive a sim game, I will only drive in cockpit view.
Yes.
And the reason I only drive in cockpit view is it's the only way that my brain can reconcile. I use that word vector, but what that's about is, where is the nose of my car pointed in relationship to which direction the force of my car is traveling? Mm-hmm. So is my nose pointed the same place that I'm pushing the car? And you want those to be the same, because when they're not the same, that means we're losing traction and we're wasting how much the – so tires have a contact patch, and there's only so much traction I can get out of that. This is getting way nerdy, isn't it?
I mean, no, not to me.
Anyway.
Jeff's a noob. Fascinating.
Jeff's a noob.
Yeah, So I'm interested.
I asked.
So I can only do so much with that tire contact patch, right? And I want it to be 100% used, but I don't want to go over the threshold. Because once I lose it, then I got all
then
kinds
you start
of,
sliding.
Then I got all
much,
kinds
right?
of problems,
yeah.
right? And the only way I can get a feel for that visually is in a cockpit view, because I just can't quite grasp it when I'm outside the car. But I think there are people who do grasp it.
I have a friend who drives like third person view, and I was trying to tell him, I was like, I have no idea how.
And he gets it.
He drives. I know that's what he likes to do, right? Like, but like for me,
well, I drive my car in a third person. I like stand outside my car.
Yeah.
And,
in real life. Now here's funny when I play
a controller, I have to go to third person view because a controller disassociates me so much from what you're talking about that I can't grasp.
Oh my goodness!
View.
So what?
I can't handle the camera.
What wheel do you use, Arnie?
I use that Fanatec Turbo S wheel.
Oh, that thing's badass!
I love it.
That thing's
bring.
Yeah, we've been talking about coming over there and like me trying it out.
It is badass. The Fanatec is really super nice. But the second piece is really listening, really, really listening. And this is one of those things that to me is super important in a video game car simulation, is that it's got to get the tire friction noise right, and it's got to get the engine really responsive.
Right.
Because I'm not looking at that stuff. I'm listening for it, and I'm feeling like where the car is and how much gas I'm giving it. And I'll let you answer this question. But it's the combination of those things. And I don't know if this was a result of the 2.0 update or if it's because I didn't give Gran Turismo 5 a good enough chance at the time it came out. But I will cop. And Gran Turismo 5 is a way better game. Just way better game. I was enjoying it so much more because first of all, anytime I lost the car, I knew exactly why I lost it. I knew exactly when I had gotten on the gas too early. I knew exactly when I had tried to carry a little too much brake into a trail braking line. I knew exactly why I had screwed up. I tried it with a bunch of different cars, and they all drove very differently based off of horsepower, weight, balance, track situation. But more than anything else, when I stopped trying to drive like I was driving in Forza and started going back to just thinking smart and slowing down a little bit to drive faster, my lap times were dropping by more than a second per lap. Like more than a second per lap in good races of, oh, wow, you know what? If I'm not just bombing down here to try and get ahead of people because I know that I'm going to wreck on the corners and go back to just good driving, this thing is going to work right.
slow in, fast out.
Yeah, and slow in, fast out was like really, really rewarding. And thinking about like, oh, this is a two right, one left complex, and I know I need to set up that final one to be on the outside to come back inside tight because we're going to a long straight, and my escape velocity there is going to be way more important than what I get through this corner complex on. And then that goes back to the thing Jason was talking about of how much the AIs really need to get better in this game, because you can try and drive all those things right. And in both games, the AI will infuriate you for violating all kinds of race rules.
I almost feel that Forza might even be worse than
Forza is worse. Forza is worse because it'll sidebang you. And
I almost feel like they were trying to hit me. They were trying to hit me.
Sometimes a sidebang can be fun. Same sidebang.
I mean, when it comes to it, I think that some of the things that make Gran Turismo a little bit better for me is like how they space the cars out. So one thing I hate about Gran Turismo, I almost damn near always start the race, a race last and have to come up,
and,
right?
And why are they all rolling start?
Yeah, even cars that shouldn't be rolling start are rolling start.
It's
races,
all rolling start.
But that's a whole nother story. When it just comes down to mechanics, I have always kind of been a proponent of Gran Turismo. Only recently, seriously, like Forza 3, I started playing it and I was like, man, this is really, really good. This is like, it gives you the feeling that you are racing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Forza 3 still had the magic for me over all the other ones.
Yeah, that's probably where I really changed was Forza 3.
Because when
really
I play Forza, I can it feels like I'm on the track. It sounds, and I'm not saying the sound's amazing, but I'm just saying that they give you that vibe that you're going fast, and it's like hitting this twitch or something inside me that I was like, man, I feel like I'm racing. I'm feeling like close-to-close, wheel-to-wheel stuff. Mm-hmm. But when I actually go back and play Gran Turismo, it's like, wow, I can actually do the techniques that I've learned or I've taught myself or I've read about, you know, slow and fast out, things like that, or like, you know, how to balance the contact patch and all this stuff on tires. Achieve that stuff. And one of the things is like there's one track in California, Infineon, that will actually be in both those games. It's a good way to match. Mm-hmm. I wish there were some more of the local Southern California tracks I've been on. But you can get roughly close to the same lap times, and besides the whole Top Gear thing that they did, but like if you know how to drive your car and with your car, it's a good way to like prepare for whatever race you're gonna be on. And I think that's better than what Forza has been doing.
Do you guys have more fun driving cars that you have driven, or cars that you would never be able to afford?
I mean, driving a fantasy car is always fun, but you have no point of reference.
Yeah.
The fastest fantasy or supercar I've ever driven was a Lamborghini Altador, right? So that car is retardedly fast, but I don't drive it on a daily basis. I don't own it. But driving one day. But driving, I have an MR2. I've driven I have 240s before. I've had with the S2000 now, Acura RSX, it was front engine, front wheel drive, whatever. You have a better feeling of what you're expecting the car to do in the game, right? Because especially if you're one who actually has pushed it too. Mm. It's totally different. Like, if I was to get my girlfriend to play, right? She'd be like, well, I don't ever drive my car this fast, so I don't know what I'm like. Everything feels awkward to me, right? But when you can like have this type of thing, it also gives you a good way of like, this possibly will help me drive faster in real life when I add this small upgrade versus this. And it's a cheaper way to see probably what you want to do with your car if that's something that you do. Yeah.
I still like playing the unattainable but street legal cars. Like I don't like going all the way to the race cars. That already goes into like going a little too far. With one exception, one time I played, it was spectacular. But I do like being able to play the car that I won't be able to own, but at least it's something that theoretically I could rent and go drive it on the street around the track or something. Yeah.
I love the LMP class on a Le Mans-like course or on Le Mans. But other than that, I'm in like the same realm with Jason where I want to drive, mid-level sports cars, sometimes tuned, because they are at the level that I still feel like I know what the hell I'm doing. Mm. And I go much beyond that, and I feel like I'm just throwing the car around the track, and it's past my ability to really drive it the right way.
So that, for me, that's like I have driven the what do they call it now? It used to be JGTC cars, because I'm a fan of those type of cars. But how
those things are rad.
Yeah. I think people are underestimating.
That's like 550 to 600 horsepower. Crazy,
super light,
crazy light frame.
But it looks like your looks regular like 350Z or something like that. But the only fantasy cars that I actually will pay attention to is actually doesn't even play in Forza Gran Turismo has their formula car. Now, if I go to talk to something that's like super technical type of driver is the latest Formula One game. Super fun. And you really need to know how to race a car like the mechanics of what a car will do if you're trying to drive it fast to actually be competitive at that game.
Mm. You're talking about F1 now.
Yeah.
See, do you like
But that jumps so far ahead versus anything Gran Turismo or Forza.
See, I sort of like F1, but I found that of late I've had less fun in F1 because those cars have so much ground effect work on them that driving them is a whole other sort of physics experience. So F1 cars are festooned with wings and sorts of magic.
I'm not that stupid.
All right. And it's just a wholly different experience because they're generating so much grip from that that they drive in a wholly different way. You know, as long as you're over 120 kph, which I don't even know what it, because everything's measured in kph in an F1 game.
About like 80?
As long as you're over like you're over like 80 miles per hour or so, you're generating some downforce off your wings, and it's a whole other ball game. You can do things in a car. You'd be like, "There's no way I'm gonna stick this corner." That's
drive,
right.
Like,
I'm going crazy fast
on rails. But that's one of those games where I will play like the whole damn game is all about like non-fantasy games, non-fantasy cars, I guess. But
I would love like fantasy world. I would love to work on a race game, and I would love to figure out how to make a real racing game again. Do you remember Race Driver series?
Yes.
I still maintain that was the best video game racing game because the AI was great to race with, and the guys who made it at Cody's were not shy about making races. Everything we do, even in Gran Turismo, it's all fucking sprints.
And so you're stuck in this
it doesn't make any sense. The game rewards you for driving the car well as far as the experience of driving it, but you'll never win a race driving well because if you're trying to look for an appropriate spot to overtake, you're never going to overtake 12 spices in 3 laps. It's ridiculous.
I agree. Well, I kind of wish that at least both of them would, Forza and Gran Turismo, would actually start doing, like, give me the pole position. Like, set me up to do qualifying laps.
Yeah.
And, like, this is where I placed. So
but
I know.
But even then, you still just run away from the pack.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I mean, I've been in... I mean, they could get a little bit better with, like, how they measure. Like, your current car has this. This is the other cars that should fit around you.
You know, like, GT... Four? Was it four that had all of the great, once you unlocked them, long races?
Yeah.
Where you were pitting, and like, which was awesome. And I
yeah,
I
but
realized
the problem with
it
that
doesn't...
was like, you need to sit down for like 24 hours.
Or
run director's mode or whatever.
Or save it at pit.
Yeah, you
or
could,
save it
yeah.
at pit. And I realized that for a gameplay session, it doesn't work as well, but there's got to be some way to conquer that. There has to be some way to conquer it to where you can get to making racing, because the fun of racing is... following the guy ahead of you or gal for 5 laps and setting them up and then outbreaking them on that turn and slipping inside of them and getting them.
I think that's the only way that's going to happen is until you start getting, you know, how we do motion capture with like real actors, right? We're doing the real thing. You need to have some equivalent of that with like real race car drivers somehow figuring out a way, the developers somehow figured out a way to like create this like real sort of situation that happens after, you know, they've recorded a regular race, a Le Mans race or something. Because that's the only, I mean, because right now the game is like computerly, the game's like, all right, well, no one's like this close to me. I'm just going to stay on the line. Right?
Yeah.
I'm never going to move off.
Sebring's a great example of this because in a real race, Sebring is amazing because there's two or three places where you might get a pass, but the rest of it, like there's some really, really tight sections of that track. where it's all about being on pace, getting in the right spot, managing your race so that when you get to the spot where you can exit a turn and get to a potential spot to pass, you're in the right place to do it. But in Forza or Gran Turismo, you've got to be trying, you know, you're constantly pushing.
Because
you've got to get recover those spaces.
It actually teaches bad techniques because you're like, if you were to go straight from one of those games and go into a real race, you would be dive bombing out of like everyone. Some guy would be taking a line and you'd just be like, all right, I'm just going to cut in front of him. That's like pure getting ready for
the
accident.
You'd be black flagged right off the bat.
Yeah.
You'd be marshaled out. You'd be like, get out of here, kid. Yeah. Anyway. We're going to get out of here. That was enough of car nerding.
When
out.
We come back, 20 minutes of dragons and fireballs and monsters.
So what did you take away from this?
I think I took away that you guys didn't want to talk about Grand Theft Auto. No. GT, you said GT. Kind of the clear winner.
GT,
for both of you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right now what you need to take away is you need to come go-karting with us.
I would love to do that. I mean,
yeah.
Just in case it wasn't clear, I'm eating massive crow. Gran Turismo 5 is... I underestimated it. I did not give enough credit. It is really, really, really good. It is really, really good. Super satisfying to get back into that. And I don't know if it was in the 2.0 update. I don't know where it was or if I didn't give it enough credit, but Congratulations. Also, happy birthday to Kazunori, whose birthday was August 5th. So there you go. Happy birthday, dude. Awesome work. It took you a long time to make it, but awesome work. All right, we will be right back on the other side to conclude this podcast with, I don't know what. We'll figure out what these guys want to talk
about.
Dragons. And fireballs. We'll be right back. I'm really a little worried about Dave. He's like, did you break up with your girlfriend or something? This is like a really mellow set of jams you're dropping on us. That's right. His girlfriend's going on an extended vacation. So maybe he's just getting ready to lay the vibes for his other girl.
That's how you get guys in trouble.
I see how it is now. He can't say anything because he's not on mic. He's like, no, no, it's not like that at all. So it'd be weird to have the Naughty Dog guys here and not let them talk about some of the stuff they're working on. So they're here. Arnie is here to announce their new Facebook game, Not Outers.
Not Outers.
No, it's always been about the MMO since I'm a big fan, right? We're going to do a Jack and Daxter
awesome.
MMO.
Jack and Daxter MMO.
Oh my God.
We already had Hub Worlds in it, right?
Unfortunately, there will be 1,000 Jaxes per server. Can only have 2 characters in the whole game.
We're trying to flip the script, right?
It's nice. You have 2 character classes.
Sweet. There's only 1 enemy.
Yeah.
And everybody has to wait 5 minutes for him to spawn.
It's all about impossible jumps. There's no other game mechanic than trying to make the
impossible jump.
You have to wait every day to try again.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait.
There's also a buggy.
Racing.
Buggy racing. Yes, there's also buggy racing. I forgot about that part.
It's called the Devil's Cart Hell.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's a car racing game.
Bring it back.
That's why we hired Jason. He thinks he's in here for like being a web developer spot, but he's going to fine-tune our physics.
Nice. It's going to be it. It's coming
perfect.
Back.
All right, then. So, actually, they're going to do a bunch of Uncharted 3 multiplayer content because they, too, understand that once you get, excuse me, I almost dropped the F-bomb. Oh, God. You know, we don't do that. I don't know. I just got sensitive to that. I didn't want to be insulting to his gear. Once you have a player base, you want to give them more stuff to play. And that's what they're going
to do. Yeah, we've actually had a really good player base compared to Uncharted 2 in terms of longevity.
Really? I mean, I said that surprisingly because I wouldn't have thought it would be that much different since it's, I would thought it had a lot of carryover.
It's been really strong for us. We've had like a really good, considering how far out from release we are. Granted, you know, our last DLC drop wasn't that long ago, but the numbers have still been pretty strong. We have a larger core group of guys that are playing the game a lot. And although there's been, actually, I'm trying to think whether we've had more or less patches. We may have had more, but, you know, part of what we've been thinking about is, you know, we really wanted to patches for us take a little bit longer than I think what people are used to online in terms of for us coming up with major revs with the way we test things. So we've been prepping and teasing for a while, like a rather big sort of patch content update. We sort of tease that there's some upcoming DLC as well. Mm-hmm. So, for us, it's like it's recognizing that, you know, we need to keep giving back, even though usually it's like for games, you know, it's fire and forget. There's not a lot of games that continue to support the game long term. I mean, the ones that do are the ones that really have a hardcore fan base and, you know, still really vocal and you see the developer respond to it. So we wanted to continue sort of that feeling a little bit.
The vocal part is an interesting piece because I feel like there's sort of this rah-rah and I'm using Rai in like the sports terminology of, you know, very vocal fan base for only two games.
As opposed to the Egyptian god.
I was trying to explain, like, it sounded really chocolatey. I'm like, why did I say that? Like, seems to be like this almost sports mentality of, you know, yeah, there's a really vocal core for different Call of Duty games, some for Modern Warfare, for some for Black Ops, right? And then after that, there's the Battlefield group, but then it really drops off really quickly. And yet, you know, it's really cool that you guys have seen an uptick in the number of people who stuck with Uncharted and that you guys are really staying with it. I'm wondering how much of what you do with the content that you bring into it is driven off of responsiveness to what you see. Because I'm sure you guys are watching tons of trends and what's happening in the game and all that kind of stuff. And then how much of it is also being creative designers and thinking, well, what do we give people to challenge them next as opposed to just having them do the same thing over?
I think a lot of it really is... We try to respond to the community and sort of what people are, you know, either hating or liking more. Although the issue we always have is we always feel like that, or our community never feels like we're listening to them enough. And that's because we do have that sort of that creative, you know, the game designer filter behind it. And it's like, we want to try new things. Let's incorporate some of the feedback into the things that we want to try that are new or different, or sort of, you know, try to do things that are fun. As opposed to more of a direct one-to-one feedback loop that I think, you know, you might see a little bit more with Team Fortress, you know, with all their balance and everything. Like, they're really good at reacting that way in a more of an MMO sort of way. Whereas, you know, we're really trying to do new things. I think we still have the mentality, and I want to speak for all the guys, but we still have the mentality that, you know, like, this is still, in general, for what we're doing, it's still a little bit of a unique area to have this, you know, third person action adventure, like climbing multiplayer type of thing, and we're still trying to figure out like where that magic comes from. You know, we've made some really good steps, but we still want to touch upon that magic. So we are making sure that we try new things on top of, you know, iterating on what has worked or what hasn't worked, and sort of responding to the community.
How would you say that reflects, say, the difference between, you know, 6 years of Call of Duty being the king of the hill and feeling that pressure of, like you said, just iterating on the same thing? For instance, the end of this this end of their season is Final Assault. It's five multiplayer maps, and it's a pretty easy argument to say, well, it's five multiplayer maps. Of course it is, because at the end of the day, that's the way to end it. That's the right way to end it, because that's the core experience. You guys still in that iteration phase, how much of it is like this sense of freedom of still, like, we've got a lot of creative juice to play with?
I think for what we're trying to do with the upcoming, sort of what we try to do with the coming match, with like releasing the lab maps and stuff like that, like, we're really trying to treat it in collaboration with our community as like a little bit more of an experimental route, rather than saying, okay, we're going to come out with a content patch and sort of leave it at that, or, you know, a content drop.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's really trying to, you know, it is about finding a way to...
The what maps, by the way? What did you call them? The lab maps?
Oh, yeah, the lab maps. Well, we've got a lab mode where we're trying experimental sort of game modes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've been looking at sort of the maps that we throw in there, but it was mostly the mode that we're talking about. But that's a way of, you know, us talking about how we're just trying to do new things that are experimental to see sort of what sticks. Because it's like, we can play test internally so much, but we still, you know, we're still sort of in our bubble, right? And so it's like, when you throw it out there, so it's like, we do want to sort of experiment with our community a little bit and sort of find that safe space, and in such a way where it's not like, you know, everyone's aware that they're the guinea pig, as opposed to, you know, like, let's try something new and like radically change the game, and then everyone hates it because, you know, they think they're being experimented on.
We have a good listener base, obviously. You guys are great listeners. Thank you very much. And I guarantee you that right now there are people out there who have Uncharted 3 sitting on their shelf and are listening to us start to talk about multiplayer, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's right, that game has multiplayer. So how approachable would you say it is to come back into Uncharted 3 now? How much would they miss having played? What sort of challenges would they face? How would they get back into the game?
For multiplayer?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more content, so I think the, you know, being able to download some of the DLC puts you up a little bit more on an even plane. But I think it's just about like any other
any other sort of multiplayer game, you are going to get like the people who've really sort of figured out how to play each mode or how to do that. But the good thing about, at least with Uncharted, is we do have a good influx of new people coming in all the time, that you're never going to feel that you're going to get in a match. I think it's rare that you're going to get into a match and you're going to feel outclassed with every match that you play, which sometimes happens when you've been playing a game where people, you know, it's really gravitated towards a hardcore audience.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People play it day after day. Like, you still have enough of the people who are sort of, you know, lower to medium so that your learning curve isn't as
high. Well, you have a player balance system, right?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, everybody does, right? Like, based on levels and stuff. So we've got some of that as well to make sure that, you know, you're not being thrown into the hardest match possible and sort of being discouraging. I mean, the whole point for us, the whole way multiplayer has always been built is, like, try to find a way to not make it discouraging for you to say, okay, like, this sucked, this was hard, I'm not going to come back and play it.
Cool. It's a challenge. I mean, I think that's a big challenge for multiplayer in today's...
Yeah, it's really tough. That's one of the reasons why, for us, we've tried to stick with team-based modes as much as possible. We added a free-for-all based on, because the community wants to do that, but we try to stick with team-based modes because that seems more friendly, right? You've got other people to help you, so you don't feel alone if you don't want to be. If you want to play the lone wolf, that's your choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jason, you brought up League of Legends earlier, and that's a game that I want to get into Dota or League of Legends or something, and I'm so intimidated. This week I played Smite, the beta for Smite, and I'm in a beta, you know, it's not even out yet, and we hopped on. I'd never really played a MOBA in any serious way before. Mm-hmm. We were getting the most derogatory comments of, like, because what the hell are you doing? Because you know what the hell I was doing, of course.
I'm
learning.
When I first played League of Legends, and the only reason I play is, like, they happen to be across the street from us. Yeah. And I have a couple friends over there. And I was interested in, like, really what they were doing over there. And I started playing, and I was like, wow, this is so hard. Like, this is, like, beyond doing tutorials, like, I am, like, worried about actually doing my first match because I feel like I'm going to, like, I'll be the weak link, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I was in the novice mode of the setting, which is, like, there's an actual private match, you know, regular level matches, and then there's, like, this novice match. And even then, people were like, what the hell are you doing? What the hell's wrong with you guys? And it's like, well, I'm just kind of figuring it out. This is, like, literally the first match I've ever been in, so give me a fucking break.
No, buddy. Yeah. When I first started, I was, like, very vocal. Like, as soon as I cop in a match, like, hey, guys, this is my first time. Like, you tell me what to do.
And then these people, motherfuckers, would have, like, vote to kick.
Vote to kick, yeah, AOL.
Yeah, or vote to surrender the whole match. It's like, I bring that up.
We need Brian here because Brian would set you straight.
I know.
But the thing is, Brian was cool about it. Like, he wouldn't set you straight as far as being a dick about it. He'd set you straight as far as, well, here's why it needs to be that way. And it really goes back to some of what we were talking about. Game design is that MOBAs distill that sort of formula-driven design of you play this role, you play this role, you play this role, down to a very concentrated part of it's very important. In order to control the lanes you need to control,
right,
and handle the advancement of the game that happens on those lanes, that you know what to do with your hero, when to do it, and how to do it.
Yeah.
And when you don't, the rest of the team suffers for it if the other team doesn't have that weak link.
But there's got to be a way, and that's the reason I brought this up, and I think we've hit a new record for people hitting their microphones on this show, by the way.
Seriously.
I just did that. That was my fault. But I brought it up just now because, as you're talking about, like, it's a difficult thing. Any game, even brand new games, as I'm experiencing, but even more so with a game that's been out for a while, if someone wants to leap into the multiplayer, it's the most unwelcome place you can be. You know,
I kind of get that vibe and I actually like playing the game, but when I play Battlefield, like, sometimes I'm like, oh man,
yeah,
I have to be by myself. Like, I'm gonna just try to kill whatever I can kill. Because if I try to do some time of T-Pace thing, like, I would just get crapped on.
Well, we're at the cusp of opening a whole other chest that is, as online game communities and services develop, the people who run those games have got to start being more sophisticated in how they handle bringing people into those worlds and not just leaving it up to,
well, go ferry yourselves to the wind, however it works out. Go hop right in with all those people. They'll welcome you with open arms. Of course they will. No, they need to start. We need to start seeing it really run with a active community of within the game folks who come and bring you in and say, Jeff, you're a new player, right? Well, you're going to come and play with this group of people who has, like, you know, a certain number.
Isn't that exactly what Valve is doing with
That's what I was just, oh man.
Yeah.
Yes, we're on the same wavelength.
Go ahead.
Because yes, what is. I was just thinking is, like, the reason it I is got exactly into it. League of Legends is because, I mean, yeah, I have the friends, but I started playing with them. Like, they knew what to do, and I just started following their lead. So I was thinking, like, the reason, the way to make that happen is, and it's hard to market, probably, right? How are you going to market a game where you're like, hey, look, buy this game. You're the one buying this game. But you really, when it comes to multiplayer, how about play with a friend? So you're not by yourself, right? Because it's going to be daunting experience. I mean, I don't know how you would market that or how you would sell that, but that is one way that I see myself, like, getting more and more into other online games.
Screw the marketing part. Like, we're just talking about the game because we like it. Who cares? Like, let a marketer
figure
out
how to market it. Because, like, what Valve does, right? Like, I'll play Dota with Brian, right? But only because I see him playing it, or Team Fortress with someone, right? Because I see them playing it, I know I'm going to go in there and I won't be by myself. I can team up with them and be like, hey, I don't play this often. What should I do? Oh, do this. Okay.
But isn't there also... I could be wrong about this, but isn't there also an in-game incentive program for you to sort of nurture or mentor someone? Am I totally pulling that out of my ass? I don't know.
In League of Legends?
No, in Dota 2.
In Dota, oh, well.
Yeah.
Yes, there is. There is, yeah. And I'm not exactly... I remember reading about it.
I haven't been the leader before.
But I will admit that I want to go play Dota 2, though I had the League of Legends experience, and I played a little bit further on just enough to get to understand how the lane system worked and heroes and all that sort of worked. And then I realized that I actually just don't really like the mechanic that much. It just doesn't turn me on that much.
Although I love it.
I get why people like it.
By the end of, a couple hours, it's
really methodical.
Smite, I was having so much fun with that game. I know I would love Dota or League of Legends if I could get over the hump of being that asshole who's in the game ruining it for everybody else. And I feel bad when I'm that guy. I don't want to be that guy. I'm
right with you. That's the most daunting thing for me, like, to start picking up some of those.
You don't want to screw up other people's games.
Yeah. And to think it's like, okay, like, I play games, I'm really into it, like, I'm into MMOs and, like, the mechanics, and, like, I play shooters, and to think, okay, like, I'm going to jump in this game and I know I'm going to be a total noob, like, I feel really bad. It's like the insecurity is so overwhelming, I'll be like, I won't go over there.
Yeah, but
it's like dropping into a raid and being a crap healer.
But it's an right. But it's an amazing experience. Basically, you are having a full action role playing game experience in half an hour. You know, you're leveling from 1 to 20 in a half an hour. You're getting awesome. You're upgrading. It's all compressed and really cool. And I mean, we were winning matches by the end, and we won one match by the end. But it was really exciting and fun.
You have to get more than one to get matches.
Yeah, I know.
Not to, like, be a super plug, but, like, one thing I find with Uncharted in our multiplayer is that because we do team objective type of gameplays, for example, Plunder or something, or Plunder is pretty much like a kind of a capture the flag. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to, like, you understand what your basic role is. Oh, snap, my guy has the idol, and he's bringing it back, cover him.
Right.
Like, I know that I know how to run all the routes that I need to do to get the idol, but sometimes there's players that play, well, no, for sure there are players that play well more than I do. So I just know, like, all right, like, I'm going to be a real good teammate and cover you, because I still get bonuses. Like, we all get bonuses if the idol comes to ourselves. I get extra bonuses for killing whoever is myself. I think for us it works a little bit easier, at least in the, like, noobs coming into a little bit harder group audiences, because you're not running a Call of Duty where it's like, all right, you're like, you win or die kind of thing, right?
You grok the combination. You get that there's this idea of, I have a gun, if I shoot the other guy that kills him, and then there's, like, then the challenge is to find just the right amount of one step beyond that to where I can still pick it up quickly and understand it and just then have fun with the tactics of it.
Yeah.
And not get bogged down in, but I've got to know all this other stuff. How many lanes are there? Well, how many lanes work? 2, 3? I don't know. And then the lanes have to be defined enough that I can pick them up really quickly, because if they're really freeform and someone who's mastered the map by playing it 30 or 40 times has a tremendous advantage over someone who's playing it a few times and then it starts to get really dicey, or if there's, you know, 3 or 4 layers of tactical superiority, then it starts to get tough. It's more about I hate reductionism to chess, but it's more about understanding that bishop moves diagonally, horsey moves forward and to the right,
yeah.
L-shape, and castle moves up and down and side to side, and then figuring out, okay, now how do I put these pieces together to make a really efficient attack?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I hate that sort of reductionism, but it does sort of apply here. Anyway.
That's also why I don't play Halo. I mean,
I don't play Halo because I get stabbed in the back all the time. I don't understand. I just died and I didn't see what hit me.
For all the advancements that we've made in matchmaking, I don't know.
All right, let's clean up some games to wrap this thing up. I want to give a very quick plug to... So I talked a little bit about Metro 2033, and after reading around some, I realized that I hadn't even turned on DX11 yet. So I turned on the DX11 rendering path, and oh my God, it's amazing.
Got pretty?
So it didn't just get pretty. It really impacted the game mechanic. And the thing that did the most is this thing that's called advanced depth of field. And advanced depth of field takes the sort of depth of field that we've gotten accustomed to seeing of, oh, look, the guy in the front, in the foreground is a little blurry, and just says, oh, that's a parlor trick. The example that I'm going to give is, well, this is a crazy encounter. This encounter, I had one of the most incredible encounters in a game, and I'm not trying to sound like I'm riding you guys' jock on this, because it's not just to ride Naughty Dog, but it's that same thing of, like, you can't, as a contrast to Spec Ops, you can't make meaningful battles where you just mow down tons and tons and tons of dudes, because mowing down a bunch of dudes necessarily reduces the whole experience and desensitizes it. So I go into this experience, I'm in a air shaft, I drop into a hideout that's underground in the metro, and I have to deal with light and light sources, patrolling bad guys, sound management, and then the advanced depth of field thing adds this really, along with the sort of specular lighting there, which is sourced lighting where you can see like the real effect of a light, and it dissipates as it comes out from it, depending on what sort of source it is, like a oil lamp versus a light bulb. I'm trying to watch shadows as shadows move and project across different surfaces, but looking further down a hallway, I'm having to deal with the fact that my focus degrades the further away it gets from me, to whereas I'm looking at shadows moving way down the hallway in a complex geometry, I'm trying to figure out where something is moving, to figure out what sort of path this person is taking, and listening to the reflected sounds of as they're talking and having conversations, and navigate all this environment to set up enough stealth kills that I can get to a situation that I can control when the actual firefight breaks out. It was intense. I mean, I spent 30 minutes crouching around and just sneaking around behind boxes and like peeking my head out and looking and going, okay, I think there's like one guy over there, but he's talking to that guy. Okay, oh, he talks to that guy for a little while, and then he goes back on his routine. And he sometimes makes a little noise, but sometimes does. Okay, I'm going to circle around over here. And like occasionally putting out lights. Once I'd figure out the lay of the land and figure out, okay, there's a train car over here on this rail track. And then there's a passageway through here. Okay, I know where this all is. Okay, I'm going to go back and blow out that oil lamp so it's not lit. And I went and set all of this up. And even having done all that, there was a couple of times that I just outright died. Because on top of that, then the way that they used the positioning against me was still strong enough that if I couldn't figure out where they were, they could still kill me. It was one of the most intense experiences I've ever had. And the rendering techniques that they were able to do because of DirectX 11 really amplified that. It was really impressive. It was awesome. Really cool. I was just, if you have, you know, that was 2 years ago tech. If you have a modern computer, I would say, grab Metro 2033, put it on DX11 and check it out. You should do it, definitely.
Yeah, I should.
And you have to go in. And the funny thing is that it had defaulted to DX9 rendering on my PC. And then I turned on DX11. It runs fine. I mean, if you go to, depending on which card you have, apparently it's not as friendly with ATIs. But yeah, if you have an NVIDIA card, you can go to the NVIDIA site and it actually shows you, use this, this, and this, and you'll get 45 frame per second average. I was like, okay, that works great. I can do that.
Nice.
What do you guys want to bring in before we go?
Jason,
anything?
MLB.
MLB is fun. Actually, you know what?
MLB is fun. I like that.
And done.
If there was a game that I think is not going to get a lot of credit or love at all because it's kind of a small game, but Foosball 2012 is surprisingly a lot of fun.
Did you say foosball?
I thought you had a typo.
Nope.
That's football 2012, right? Nope. Football 2012.
Foosball 2012 on Vita is a ton of fun, and people should play it. It's a quick game, and there's a little bit of bugs, but it's a ton of fun for what
from
it costs.
The makers of Skee-Ball 2012.
I think they've done a really good job. So I don't know. That's what I'm playing as one of the games I'm playing. Foosball.
Foosball players play when they're not playing foosball.
When they're not playing the real table, take it on the road.
So you mentioned earlier that you're in love with your Vita. Is that primarily the reason why, or is there other Vita games that you're?
I mean, I was finished up Gravity Days, and that was amazing. I don't know. Gravity Rush.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Where did Days come from? I don't know.
Daisy.
That's NBA 2K.
I don't know. I seem like, I don't know, maybe because of the work schedule or not, but like it's just easier sometimes to just pick it up and play. I'm not really a mobile type of gamer, like mobile phone gamer. But when I'm at home, I'll play some. Right now I'm playing Warhammer 40K.
Really?
And I'm enjoying it.
Huh.
Probably because it is super linear. Space Marine, yeah.
It's a great game.
Space Marine, totally another overlooked. Super overlooked game. Yeah. And by the way, I hope that no one overlooks Darksiders 2, because Darksiders 2 is out in 2 weeks now.
I think it's a perfect release time. It's going to hit when there's nothing else to talk about. It's going to shine.
I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, me too, man. I love the first one so much.
Anyway. All right. Let's wrap her up with our finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Bam. All right. It is a tag team event down here at the other end of the table.
I'm going to tag or finish move. Patch 113 is going to be amazing for Uncharted. And I know we're only teasing a little bit of stuff about it. But once we do reveal it, you guys, it's a whole new, multiplayer stuff.
There's more to come really soon.
Like, really soon. Also, it's the weekend. So if you're out there and you can drink, have Booker's whiskey. two or three, you'll be good. You will have a great weekend.
Two should be sufficient. Little ice is good, too, yeah.
Yeah, for
some
sure.
Water.
This episode brought to you by Hair on Your Chest.
When about is the target range for the patch?
I don't think we August. Have announced it. Oh, there you go.
We've said August.
We're in that month
August.
Right now.
We're comfortable saying August if we haven't said it before.
There you go. So sometime in the month of August, you got that to look forward to, folks. Good stuff. And Arnie?
Well, speaking of weekends, Jason and I have been talking about potentially doing the Targa Trophy sometime. We're still undecided, but that's a really cool thing if you are in Southern California and want to check it out.
Or a car enthusiast.
And a car enthusiast. It's an easy way to sort of do some competitive driving without being on the track, without really being in a dangerous situation, because basically you're just trying to do checkpoints and arrive at the finish line at the exact prescribed time, so you can't go too fast, too slow. We haven't done it, but I'd love to do it sometime.
And it's also like super exotics.
So it's Densha Dago for cars?
Hey, I'm Italian, dude. That's offensive.
Yes.
Wow.
Wait, what?
I didn't know it was
how do you find out more about this? Where would you go?
They have a website. Yeah, just Google Targa Trophy.
Okay.
They run three or four events a year. But it's all super exotics for the most part.
TARGA?
And like super exotics going the speed limit, right?
When I say super exotics, I mean like the highest you can find. Like the highest you can find.
Yeah, Lambos, high-end, like Corvette ZR1s.
The next one.
We need to talk more often.
We should. The next one is they're going to Vegas.
It's a Vegas trip, yeah.
Is there anything with dragons?
Do you want to be my co-driver or vice versa?
Oh, yeah, you have to have a co-driver. You have to have a co-driver. And it's not
serious?
Bad. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll talk. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. I mean,
you can bring your Civic, but yeah.
I don't think they care. They don't care what you enter, but most people that enter.
I mean, like, really cool. Multiple Bugattis.
Yeah.
Like, the craziness stuff you can ever see. And, like, you will be driving side by side or
what?
In line with them. I'm totally serious. TARGA.
Usually they seem like they're a little bit shorter, but like this Vegas trip, I mean, that's going to be...
That's
if you're stopping, that's
going to
be like... No, if you're stopping, probably like 6 hours. Oh, so it's going to be a good trip. Because usually it's like, you know... Like,
we were going to do... We signed up for one, but something happened. But
I was traveling for work.
Oh, yeah. But we will, for sure. Super fun. Think of like kind of like a more tamed Gumball 3000.
Yeah, it's like one lap.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, without the one lap.
I like Gumball. The Gumball crazy party, too. Exactly. Yeah, eyes get big too.
Thumbs up.
Hit it to win it. Wow, you guys just won. I feel like we should just like skip now. You won it. You have finished the finishing
move. That was a pretty epic finishing move. Okay, so this is going to be not as cool, but thought I'd recommend an iOS game that my compatriot on TRS hooked me up with, or turned me on to, I should say. I don't even know how you say the title. It's a one with like seven zeros after it. I don't know, 10 million or I don't know what. Dan kept calling it 100,000, but it's more zeros than 100,000. Anyway, I was a massive fan of Puzzle Quest when it came out. Love that game with all my heart. This is similar to Puzzle Quest in that it's a role-playing game with a match three fight mechanic.
Mm.
But it's got some even more interesting elements. It's got a really fun throwback 8-bit graphic style. It's got some really cool twists on how monsters fight you and how you upgrade your... You can upgrade your castle and do all kinds of really cool stuff. So I recommend people checking it out. It's $2. It's one with a bunch of zeros at the end.
Wow.
Like 8-0, 7-0, something like that.
I still have mountains of stuff I wanted to talk about. I didn't talk about Lost Odyssey. We'll talk about that next week. I wanted to talk about 4 a.m. because I finally have my TV set up in my den and was able to play some 4 a.m. and love that. But since this is finishing moves, I'll throw this out there. We talked a lot about MMOs. There is another MMO that's been garnering some respect among some of my friends in the business, like Phil Kohler, which would be Secret World. And it's pretty freaky, and it's going to be free this weekend.
I should check it
now,
out.
It's not free to play yet. I'm almost of a mind that at this point, any MMO is going to have to ultimately go free to play. It's a huge download. So if you're listening to this on Friday, if it's remotely interesting to you, just go start downloading right now because it's going to cost you gigs of download. And obviously, if you have a cap, then that's not going to be cool. But it's free to play for the weekend. You can check it out. The premise is essentially crazy supernatural things happening with underground societies in a modern world. And if that sounds intriguing to you, it's free to play for the weekend. Go check it out and just figure that at some point in time, it's going to have to go free to play. I mean, how can an MMO exist that doesn't do that, honestly, right? All right, there you go, folks. That is your Weekend Confirmed. Extra special thanks to Jason and Arnie from Naughty Dog for being here. The doorway is wide open. You guys are welcome to join us anytime.
Yeah,
come to our website.
We'd love to come back, yeah.
Come to our website. Come follow us on Twitter and... Each of us.
Say your Twitter handles.
Yeah.
Mine is JMPAUL. At JMPAUL, yeah.
Yeah. Mine's at Arnie Meyer, which is ARNEMEYER.
And you guys have a regular Naughty Dog account to follow?
Yeah, it's Naughty _ Dog.
Yeah.
So please follow that.
Naughty _ Dog.
All the news super quick. We're on Google+. We're on all that fun stuff.
Jeff Cannata, you know how to keep up with him. Obviously.
Jeff Cannata, 2N1T.
Totally Rad Show as well. Total Recall on Totally Rad Show coming up.
Yeah, as you hear this, it'll have already been out.
I'm actually excited to see that movie.
No, it's not bad.
We will talk after this.
You were going to say something at the beginning of the show.
I know.
That
that's what I'm going to say now. I hate to end on a downer. So, although I had a little bit of a false start about PAX this year, after 6 wonderful years of doing a live show with you guys at PAX, it looks like we're not going to be able to do a Penny Arcade show this year, and it's super disappointing to us.
Yeah,
Jeff doesn't really have any way up there, and to be frank, we're not really in a position to get up there either. And it's Penny Arcade. It's awesome. It's become a great thing. It's going to be a ton of fun. You guys all have a fantastic time.
I'm going to be very sad that we cannot be there.
We're super sad that we can't be there.
Convention of the year.
But
stuff happens.
Yeah. And it costs money and stuff. Yeah, I mean, you know, so we're lucky to have the show, and we will have an awesome show for you anyway. And if you are up there, you should definitely go check out the Giant Bombcast, and everybody else who does live show. I'm sure G4 will be up there doing their stuff. I actually haven't looked at the register or the schedule, but I'm sure there'll be lots of great stuff for you guys to check out. And we won't be there though. Aww.
But we'll be here in your ear holes every week.
Exactly, right here. Next week, Nicole from G4 will be over here. And then we have, who do we have lined up after that, Dave? And then he can't think of
Dave's drunk.
I think he's had some more makers. All right, that's it, folks. Thanks very much, as always, to the Atlantis Group for hosting us here in their beautiful Santa Monica studios. And we are Ghost.